This is their philosophy. In fact, there was an article about... this started with abortion. Abortion is... In America, there was a about pro-choice and pro-life. Just see how they word it. One was pro-life. You can't say pro-death. So they say pro-choice. So the mother has a choice. So this devotee wrote an article. So tomorrow, suppose you say your old grandfather is in the home and this fellow is coughing and, you know, creating a scene. And you don't like him around, you know. So your choice. Will you just get him out and you just kill him? And then tomorrow you may not like your wife or husband or something. So pro-choice, you know, just remove it. Because your choice, you don't like it. I mean, it can extend to any level. It starts with something very, very seemingly very insignificant. But then it slowly comes into every aspect of our life. So therefore, he wrote a very nice article. The devotee wrote a very beautiful article. That's how it creeps into a whole culture. So, tolerating is very important. Example, in Bengali there is a proverb. There is a sieve. You know a sieve? It has holes in it and where you know, sieve, right? Sieve, yeah. Put everything and you just shake it so everything filters out and, you know. Now, in Bengali there is a proverb. The sieve is pointing a finger at the needle and it says you have a hole in your body. The sieve is full of holes and it is pointing a finger at the needle and says you have a hole in your body. So it's like that. You have so many and you are pointing at someone. So people are tolerating us, so we might as well tolerate others. So in this way, by putting ourselves at the receiving end of a situation, we become sensitive to the feelings of others. Not only humans, but animals and plants, which also eat, sleep, etc. In fact, when one of the devotees who wrote this Obstacles in Devotional Service, no, another one, recent one, Purnachandra Prabhu. Purnachandra Prabhu was here when we were talking. He said, sometimes, you know, we just, this asana we offer when devotees are sitting. So one devotee just kicked it. You know, just moved it aside with his feet. So he was later mentioning in the class, he said, that is also a male ego. What is that? He said, Purusha feeling. I mean that, Hare Krishna. So, the Purusha means I'm the enjoyer. So this is meant for me. So just if you kick an object, that also shows a big ego. You know, everything is for my enjoyment and I can hit with them. So, I don't know, we call it the foot switch. When we first had this foot switch in the temple, at that time our temple president, he would say, no, don't kick it. Bend down and put off the switch. But we said, no, it's a foot switch. And still, you know, it's in the temple hall, it's all sacred, so you should put it on and put it on. The idea is, you know, when you kick something, it's like insignificant, you know, you just kick. It means you have an ego. You're considering it as something, you know, insignificant. I mean, it's so, the whole idea is, you become, it's just like when the room is full of filth, if you put a kilo of filth or dirt, no one notices. But the more you clean up, even a small speck of dirt stands out. You know? So as we clean our consciousness of the gross things, even subtle things slowly start standing out. And we can notice, sometimes devotees who are chanting for some time, you know, they already feel, you know, even a little thought of lusty thought, which is comparatively very insignificant. And you start feeling, no, shit, what a thought is coming in my mind. How could it, this kind of a thought come? Earlier, probably we did 100 times something more than that, and we never felt anything. But the mere fact is, the heart is getting cleansed, the consciousness is getting cleansed. Even a small speck of anartha, unwanted thought, desire, whatever, stands out, and we feel very embarrassed. How can this kind of a thought come? So, these are... So when we put ourselves at the receiving end, how I must have done, and somebody tolerated me, then we learn the art of tolerating others. And he says, those who cause unnecessary suffering to others are called cruel. They can't find peace of mind anywhere. So, unnecessary suffering, we don't tolerate and start irritating. They're called cruel, and they can't find peace of mind anywhere. So even for our own to find peace of mind, we have to avoid these kind of tendencies. So, okay. Then, being a teacher or leader. So there are three groups of people with whom we relate. Right? There are three kinds of people. There are superiors, there are equals, and there are subordinates. So, in the material realm, superiors, you know, in material relationship, say in a company or something, superiors may be envied. Oh, he's got, you know, got the climb, the ladder of success very soon. So you may envy. Those who are equals, you have excessive rivalry. And those who are subordinates, there is a tendency to exploit. Whereas in spiritual relationships, superiors must be respected, the equals must be befriended, and to subordinates one should be merciful. One should extend oneself and help. Serve. So the whole mood is service. So you serve the seniors by respecting, you serve the equals by befriending, and you serve the subordinates by being compassionate and helping in any way, extending. So social disposition apply only to material body, not to spiritual constitutional status, which were equal. See, these equals, superior or inferior, etc., subordinate, is only in a social disposition, right? In a social setup. But actually speaking, the spirit soul is the same. Now somebody, a living entity, may be my son, but probably he was my father. You know, in my previous life, probably he was my father. He died. The same father may come as the son. So in one relationship, he may be a subordinate. But who knows, he was at one time the senior. So these are all only social disposition. But spiritually, you see, perceive everyone as equal and you serve. But according to social situation, the service may take different, facet. It may take a different way. I mean, am I clear? I mean, is it making sense? So you want to serve, but you serve in different ways. But the mood is to serve. That remains the same. So, as teacher, we should relate in a suitable manner. Suppose, as a teacher, you're trying to teach something. So as a teacher, at least you have to be, you should relate in a suitable manner. And for that, you should have at least, he says, four qualifications. Number one, you should know the subject matter thoroughly. If you don't know the subject matter thoroughly, you can't take that position of a teacher. Now, live according to what we teach. Or in other words, walk your talk. You can't be practicing, I mean you can't be preaching what you can't practice. Otherwise it will not carry weight. Those words will not have weight. And another thing is to present knowledge palatably or in a way that people can relate to and understand and appreciate. Otherwise you are talking at a different level and it just goes above the head of someone. And maintain respect for students and followers. Just because someone is your student, you can't just, you know, boss around or thing like that. You respect and you continue to have that. So if these four qualities are there, then that is, then the relationship will always be good. If you, you know, otherwise, yeah. Maintain respect for students or followers. One can be even a guru, as Prabhupada said, you know. Prabhupada would look at his disciples as sent by his Guru Maharaj to serve them. As representatives of his Guru, and he would serve them in whatever way was best suited for their betterment. It would take different role. It would take different ways. But the mood was always one of service. Seeing them as respectable, and you know, to respect them also as another living entity. So this is, actually the first two is okay. You may know subject matter. You may even live up to what you are preaching. You may be practicing what you are preaching. But the last two are very difficult. To present the subject matter in a palatable way and to respect. And for this, mere authority is not enough to win the hearts of others. You know, simply by authority, you can't gain obedience. Like Prabhupada, he just didn't throw his weight around. That I am the guru, you are the disciple. Okay, you better do what I am saying. That can't go on for long. And there is a chance that this authority can go into your head. And you may become very proud. So, this doesn't, you know, if you want to respect your juniors and also students, and if you want to present message, you must be really concerned. Or, then only you can present it. And how you tell it? He says, to make education and leadership become entertaining and stimulating, tell the truth always, but tell it gently and lovingly. It's just like, you may give a bitter medicine. Sometimes truth is bitter. But you give it a sugar coating, so that people relish it. At the same time, the message is digested. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say, Prabodhananda Saraswati told this, which Prabhupada told. Said, when you go to someone while distributing books, so you may go to him and say, my dear sir, you are so well educated, you are so learned. So in this way he opens his heart because he is praised. And then you say, please now forget all the nonsense that you have learned and accept the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, to make that person receptive, you praise and things like that. That means there is a presented in a way that he will be open to receive it. And then you give the message. And especially when we have to correct someone, we should do it very carefully. Especially as leaders and teachers, when we have to correct someone, we have to do it very carefully. In a way that doesn't hurt them. Danvir Maharaj himself gives. He said he was in charge of the ashram of new bhaktas in the Brahmacharya ashram. So one time he went into the ashram and all of them had gone out to check their lockers, whether it is clean or not. And then some of the lockers he found to be very unclean and not kept properly. So what he did was, he stuck a label on top. He said, Muchi. Muchi means unclean. So he stuck, whichever lockers were unclean, he just stuck. This was basically to instruct them that you have to be clean. But when he came back later, he realized that the devotees were so discouraged that they had written, you know, Muchi. That he had come, he had visited, and he has passed the statement Muchi. So they were very much discouraged by that. So he says, immediately I realized that I had spoken the truth, but I spoke it in a way that they didn't appreciate fully. I was reading another book. It says, best is, there's another option is, all the lockers which were clean, he could have written Shuchi. All these are clean. So immediately they get the message that it wasn't clean. It could have been done that way. But this was very much, they were very much disturbed by this. So, we have to correct in a very nice way without hurting the feelings. A junior will naturally take a subordinate position, not by force or automatically, but when he has confidence that the superior actually knows. Then he will reveal his mind and inquire submissively. As they say, you can't demand respect. You have to command respect. So they will naturally, and they will respect only when they have confidence. Danvir Maharaj gives a good example. When Prabhupada went to the West, these hippies, they were like kind of rebels. They had absolutely rejected the establishment. You know, even their parents' authority. At that time it seems there was a saying, don't trust anyone above 30. This was their lifestyle. They wouldn't trust anyone above 30. So, they were trying various people. Allen Ginsberg, we were reading, you know, Prabhupada Lilamrita. So many. Timothy Leary or something, some names. So many names are there. All these people they were trying, but they couldn't actually surrender, submit. But when Prabhupada went, absolutely they surrendered. They confided and they followed his instructions. Now, he was not just 30, he was 70. You know, equal to their grandfather. But somehow they had full confidence in him. And therefore, they respected. And then they followed, absolutely, completely. Probably, even to our parents, we may not have that much of trust and, you know, obedience. But they absolutely surrendered. Because they had full confidence about his knowledge, his intention, his good intention, his love, and therefore they trusted him. So when that comes, things follow. And that's how really, yeah. Yeah. Follows. Yeah. Same thing. Similar thing. But once they know, and that means when they know that, they have confidence. This, like Malti Mataji was telling. Initially, when they met Prabhupada, And when he would speak, absolutely, they were not able to understand what he was speaking. His accent was totally different. So they would observe his ears, how they are moving, his nose, how it is flaring up and down, and his, you know, eyebrows are moving. That's all. They were not able to appreciate in the initial stage. But one thing they knew, that this man has not come to cheat us. She said that we were sure of that, that this man has not come to cheat us. And therefore they had that complete trust, love and trust in him. Yeah. And then he says another way, one more thing before we go to that last one. The last, this is very important, very interesting, which is why many a times relationships may be spoiled. He says, he calls, he gives the subtitle as wearing different hats. Now, can an authority have friendly relation with his subordinates? Yes, in certain areas, as long as both parties know the parameters, or else it breaches etiquette. This is very important, you know, what kind of relationships we have with our seniors, with our equals and juniors. Now somebody, say for example, a guru, you know, the guru we may have different relationship with equals and then, and how to relate. So as a leader also, as we have relationships, if these three things are not properly, if you don't follow proper etiquette, then relationships may be strained. So it's very important. In some situation, it is possible that one who is subordinate can become my senior. And in another situation, we could be friends. And in another situation, I take a senior role and somebody else takes my subordinate role. And this could happen in a matter of half an hour. I'll give an example. Just a week back, one devotee comes to teach, not a devotee, he's a very scholar in music. He is one of the uncles of our devotees. He comes to teach Radhanath Maharaj the, you know, some tunes of Mahamantra. So he walked into his room. So Maharaj, you know, made this gesture of offering him. He is quite old. He must be around 60, 65. So Maharaj made this, you know, hand gesture of touching his feet and offered him a seat because he can't sit down. It's very difficult for him. And then he started teaching and Maharaj was learning the harmonium. This was for some time, about half an hour. And then both were sitting and having nice jokes and laughing, you know. But as he was about to leave, he offered his obeisances to Maharaj, touched his feet and then left. So within a span of say 45 minutes, I could see all the three relationships. So when he came, Maharaj took the role of a student and he was teaching and he was learning. Then when the harmonium was kept aside, they were just sharing about the weather and about things, what's happening in Bombay, whatever. More of a friendly talk. But as he left, he was always, of course he knows what is the position of Maharaj. So he, you know, he offered his obeisance, Maharaj, please give your mercy, whatever. So, now one cannot, just because one person is a senior in one respect, suppose after this class, I want to know something about this microphone and one of you is a technical person, then I ask you, can you just tell me, you know, how to do this? I take a subordinate role. There I can't just order, otherwise I break the relationship or, you know, strain the relationship. And if you are discussing something which is neutral, then you know you are like friends. So if that relationship is not proper, if you don't change hats according to the situation, if you are not sensitive to that, then that leads into straining of relationship. This is very important. Sometimes it happens if you are not sensitive to these. Consistency of relationship in different situations as friend or superior puts the subordinate in a comfortable position. You know, in spite of a gulf of difference between superior and subordinate, they can share friendly relationships. For this, the superior must be expert at changing hats. He gives some nice examples. A husband takes subordinate position when asking a wife how to change diapers. Yeah, he may be like the head of the family, but when he's changing the diaper of the child, you know, he asks the wife, how to do it? You teach me, you know, I don't know. So he's taking a subordinate role. A wealthy businessman playing golf on a friendly level with an employee in a club. So once in a business, he's the boss and everyone is his employee. But when they go out just, you know, play a game or something, at that time you can't say, no, I'm the boss, I play first. No. You follow the rule, the game. So, but if the employee thinks that, wow, my boss is treating me as his equal, so he carries the same thing. Next day he goes to the office and puts his hand across the shoulder of the boss in the office. That means he's straining the relationship. So you should know where that relationship ends, where the relationship changes. One should be sensitive to that. And then the relationship can be smooth. A dog and its master. Now sometimes the dog, you know, the dog knows. Even the dog is actually sensitive. You know, you order the dog, do this, and he sits down. But sometimes the master is in a playful mood. He just wants to play around. And is equal, friendly level. And sometimes sometimes they have this blind man as a dog, you know. What do you call that? So the dog is trained, you know that. So sometimes the dog takes a master's role. You know, it guides the master, the blind man. And sometimes it goes behind and pushes the blind man. Go here, go there. So there is an exchange of roles. Sometimes he takes a lead role, sometimes the master becomes subordinate, sometimes he equals, sometimes the master orders the dog to sit down. So even like that. So it is very delicate and one has to be sensitive. That is the whole point of this relationship. One has to be very sensitive to others' position and others' feelings. Both are important. One should be always sensitive to what is the position in this particular relationship, what is the position and what are the feelings. And if that is properly respected according to time, place and circumstance, then the relationship will be nice. Insensitivity ruins the relationship. If you are not sensitive to that, then sometimes there's a bitterness that comes into the relationship. Krishna one time was trying to pull the leg of Rukmini Devi. He was joking. You know that's the story in Krishna book. He was joking. I think you did a wrong choice, you know, in marriage. Then the relationship will be nice. Insensitivity ruins the relationship. If you are not sensitive to that, then sometimes there's a bitterness that comes into the relationship. Yeah. Krishna one time was trying to pull the leg of Rukmini Devi. He was joking. You know that's the story in Krishna book. He was joking. I think you did a wrong choice, you know, in marrying me. You should have married someone else. Even now, I'm serious. If you want to, you know, get married, I have no objection. You go ahead. And Rukmini took the thing so seriously that she fainted. And Krishna understood. Oh my God, I was joking, but she took it. Didn't take it in the same mood, and therefore the relationship was spoiled, and she actually fainted. So immediately, Krishna woke her up, and you know, brought her back to the senses, and spoke in such a way to get back that relationship. So if you are sensitive and you know, oh, something is wrong, immediately you have to cover up and bring back that relationship. Otherwise, if both are not on the same level, then the relationship is strained. Another example Dhanvir Maharaj gives, that one time, I don't know whether it's actual experience, he was going through the airport. So these people come to check the luggage. So the police officer asked him, so are you carrying any dangerous things? And he jokingly said, yeah, I'm carrying a bomb. And immediately alert was sent, dogs were brought and things like that. So, you know, you can joke, but this is not the right time. And you know, that person is asking a serious question and you're not sharing the same thing and you just make a joke. So, I remember one newcomer had come and all the devotees were sitting, and that fellow asked one devotee, just caught one devotee, sir, what's your name? He said, Krishna Das. Oh, Mancha. Where are you from? He says, Golok Vrindavan. And he was kind of taken up. Everyone started laughing. And he was serious, the newcomer. He just wanted to know. Initially he said, Krishna Das, maybe, oh yeah. So he was not lying. Everyone is Jivara Sarupai Nitya Krishna. And we are all coming from the same place. But because he did not share it, he was little upset. That everyone laughed. That means he came to know that this person is not telling the truth, he's telling a lie. Though he didn't, but he was taking it lighter vein, but he took it seriously. And you know, that kind of hurt him. So, you know, like, that's kind of sensitivity. They can perceive it, they can sense it. Something is wrong here. I'm being made fun of. So, this is just a very little examples. But sometimes, in a very, very sensitive issues, and whole wars take place just because, if Kshatriyas are offended, little insult. Draupadi laughed because Duryodhan mistook land for water water for land, and he fell. She laughed. I mean, it was something to be laughed. And it resulted in a whole war. Because, you know, big people with big egos, if they get involved and little sensitivity is disturbed, finish, you spoil that relationship. Forever, sometimes, at least for this life. And these are small instances. Small people with little ego hurt, no problem, they can cover it up. Or it doesn't make much difference. But bigger the, or influential the person, and little disturbance in the ego. Like one time, King the king of Bharatpur, in the early ISKCON days, when Prabhupada went with Achyutananda Swami and others to Vrindavan, the king of Bharatpur, at that time, we had no temple. ISKCON had no temple in Vrindavan. So they had this Keshi Ghat, there is a small palace. Have any of you visited Vrindavan, seen that? Keshi Ghat palace? That was given by the king, by somebody. And devotees were living there. It's a broken down place, but they were living there. So he sent a beautiful silver swing as a gift. And an assistant, a manager, brought of the king. He brought the thing in a truck and he wanted to hand it over. At that time Prabhupada was not there. Achyutananda Maharaj was there. Achyutananda was someone. It is mentioned in Vrindavan days by Haigiri Prabhu. So he said, don't deliver it here, deliver it at the other site. He said, no, I have brought it, I have to deliver, I have to go. He said, no, I won't accept it here. Why don't it? I can't carry it again. So you better deliver it in a different address. So that fellow left. And he was thinking that he has gone to deliver it there. He went back. He went back and returned. And when you return the gift to the king, it's like an insult. That I offered a gift and you refused it. He became so angry. He said, he actually asked, he's going to get out of that palace. He had offered that palace. He said, get more out of this place. A small thing, a miscommunication, insensitivity, led to the relationship being spoiled. Prabhupada was very upset initially. Then he said, okay, Krishna's plan, something. But the point is, these things are quite important, being sensitive to. Yeah. Yeah. And finally, one more thing is the danger of pride. How pride can spoil relationship. If someone superior asks for our advice, it doesn't mean we are superior in all respects. Again, same thing. You know, somebody may ask some opinion. That doesn't mean that we are better off. If one actually knows he is an authority and he shouldn't be afraid of assume the position of a teacher, the whole idea is, if you are very clear of that position, then things go smoothly. But if that position is not clear, if you are not qualified for that, then the relationship is gone. Okay, right. Thank you. So he says, if I am lusty, I exploit. If I am greedy, I cheat. If I am angry, I bomb. That means, venting our passion on others is a sure way to obliterate friendly relationships. Because of the mode of passion or ignorance, sometimes we are angry or we are lusty or something. And we just impulsively act. And based on that, we spoil the relationships. Therefore, yoga system promotes control of 6 primary urges. Speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly and genitals. A sober person is one who cannot be recklessly driven by these urges. Thus, he is qualified to become a leader or a teacher. That means the importance of these 6 urges. They are so important because if one is reckless or impulsive to the passions, lower modes, then that can either you become lusty or angry or proud and then you spoil the relationship. So these are some of the tips that he gives. And now we will go to the 6 relationships that we talked of. 6 kind of exchanges, loving exchanges. Giving gifts, dadati pratigrihnati. You have the book, right? I'll just read the translation. This is text 4 of Upadeshamrita. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are 6 symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. So, I'll just try to elaborate a little on these things. This is how, now as we were discussing yesterday, some of us may already be practicing it, but we don't know the potency of this process. And some who are maybe little introvert type or, you know, not very friendly type, prefer to kind of loner type, they can use this 6 techniques to establish relationship. Very much helpful. First is offering gifts to others. Actually, giving gifts works for all, for everyone in developing good relationships. Naturally, when you give some gifts to others, you know, it's just like, it's a best way of starting a relationship. It is a gesture of friendship. When you give a gift, it's just like that Maharaj sent a gift to, it's like I am opening a door for friendship. Would you like to? So it's a gesture for friendship. It shows, when you give a gift to someone, it shows that you care for that person and you care about that relationship. Otherwise, why would you bother to? You know, you don't give a gift to any Tom, Dick and Harry you meet on the street. The mere fact that you are giving a gift, that means you care about that person and you care about that relationship. You want to actually develop a relationship with a person, and therefore it's an offer, it's a gesture that you are making. Therefore, you have gone through the effort involved in it. And making a sacrifice. Isn't it? I mean, when you give a gift, nicely wrapped and packed or whatever, it shows you have thought about that person, you have actually, you know, taken the effort and the endeavor to get the gift, nicely wrap it and then hand it over. So therefore, it speaks a lot. Of course, God is the ultimate charitable person. And what is His gift to us? Nature. Freely He has given us all the gifts. He gives water, He gives beautiful fruits. Everything in nature is a gift of God. And He has given all of these freely. Therefore, you know, it's very easy to befriend God because He keeps on giving us gifts. Day in and day out. He is the most charitable person. That is why charity is a divine quality. Because it begins with the supreme divinity. It's Krishna. He is always giving. Never expecting anything in return. He is giving so much. Of course, motive should not be exploitative or mundane. You know, if I am giving a gift with an idea of, now I'll develop friendship. After that I'll, you know, as much as possible I'll get, what can I get from this fellow? If the motive is mundane or, you know, exploitation, then that relationship cannot be as sweet. Actually, giving a gift means giving of oneself to others. You know, it's like an extension of mine. So my hard-earned money, I buy something and give you. That means it's a part of me. I'm giving my heart. And when we give a gift, we are obligating that person to us through the friendly vehicle of the gift. Naturally, when someone gives you a gift, you are obligated. after giving that gift, if he requests something, you can't as easily refuse as you would have done otherwise. You know, somebody has given a small gift and you kind of feel obligated. And then he requests a small favor. They say, yeah, why not? I'll do it because he has done so much for me. It's natural that obligation comes. It is a principle of loving exchange, of creating friendship. It's an act of selflessness on the point of, just like it is a kind of selflessness that you are extending yourself to give a gift. And therefore, it is appreciated. And these are small points, but all these are included. When you give a gift, that's what it speaks a lot. All these things are happening in a subtle level. But when we actually say it out, these are like 10, 15 points. But otherwise, subtly this is actually going on. This chemistry is involved when we give a gift. Now, it need not be a physical gift alone, which we'll discuss a little later. It need not be a physical gift. It could be some service done. It's like some social service. What is social service? I come and help you with something. Free of cost, without any this one. So, that's also a gift. It can be some social service. It can be done individually or collectively. Just like one nation gives a charity of, you know, so many thousands of dollars for the medical little later. It need not be a physical gift. It could be some service done. Just like some social service. What is social service? I come and help you with something. Free of cost, without any this one. So, that's also a gift. It can be some social service. It can be done individually or collectively. Just like one nation gives a charity of, you know, so many thousands of dollars for the medical welfare of other nation. That's like a gift. And the other nation is obligated. So it can be a physical or non-physical in the form of service. It can be individual or it can be from group to another group. Just like to an orphanage, a social organization gives something. Or this, what do you call, Lions Club or, you know, Rotary Clubs and all that. They give some gifts. It's like that. It's a gesture of trying to serve. So even that is kind of a gift being given. Now, bond between parents and children are there because parents are giving so much of themselves. You know, why the relationship between parents and children are so strong, so much of obligation is there? Because everything they have been providing, including the body, the body is provided by the parents, and the sustenance of the body in the form of food and shelter has been provided for such a long time. When we were helpless from their day to current state. Therefore, the relationship is quite deep. You know, there is a sense of obligation. They have done so much for us. How can we not repay? And this is because they have been giving these gifts. I mean, their expectation, they don't expect in turn. Generally, it's just a giving of gift. And therefore, the obligation is, or the bond is very much there. A relationship is very deep. Unlike any other person. Because this person has given us so much. Without giving, love remains stagnant. Now, love means constant reciprocation. Giving and taking. Giving and receiving. If it stops, then love remains stagnant at that level. Okay, you gave and I accepted. Hare Krishna, that's all. And I know, 10 years later, you know, I still, okay, but it has remained. But actually love means dynamic. There is some reciprocation and again reciprocation. In this way it goes on and on. The more you give, the more you love, the more you love, the more you give. When you love someone very much, you give more, and the love increases, then you give more. It's like never ending. It goes on increasing. Just like with God, He is giving so much, so we try to give our best. He gives, and then we give, and it goes on, ever increasing. Giving a gift is a function of love. Manifestation of love. It's actually manifestation of love. When you don't love, there is no question of giving a love to someone you hate. You don't give a gift to someone you hate. So naturally, giving a gift means it's a manifestation of love. There's a beautiful story. This is one time, there was a beggar, a saintly man, not a beggar, a saintly man. He would go begging at the door of some householders. That was a rule, basically to. So, one lady would never give anything. Never give anything. So, but he would regularly go. So one time he went and stood there. And this lady got so angry. She went inside. And there was a, what do you say? To heat your arm, you just have some burning ember or what they call wood. You burn, you know, to just keep yourself warm. There's a chamber like in which you burn some fuel. So there was an ash lying there of the previous day's fire. She took a pile of ash, took it in a pot, and came and threw it in his chadar. Here is some. She wanted to. She was so fed up that this man comes again and again. She wanted to get him off all of her forever. And she threw this ash. And this saintly man thanked her. He says, "Thank you so much for giving this." So she was shocked. She said, "Do you really mean I wanted to insult you so that you won't come, and you're thanking me for throwing this ash at you?" He said, No. I'm very happy you have at least begun the process of giving. Something at least you gave. Till now you were refusing to give, but today at least you gave something." So the point is, giving is a beginning of, as he said, selflessness, and giving is a beginning of a sign of love. He said that he has begun the process of giving to know what it is like to give. At least you know now what it is like to give. When there is love, giving gifts is extremely enjoyable. Actually, when there is love, when you love someone, giving gifts is very enjoyable. You like to give. This is Diwali time, you know. People keep giving gifts and sending so many sweets and all that. If one can please a beloved person, that pleasure is worth much more than the cost of the gift and the effort involved in obtaining it. Actually, the real thing is not just the cost of the gift, but the pleasure of the person who receives it. If the person is very pleased by receiving the gift, that gives the giver the real satisfaction. It may not be the very costly item. It may not be, and the effort. Yes, you may have put a lot of effort to look for just the right thing that will please that person. But more than that, whether that thing is pleasing. So, of course, a useless gift is better than no gift at all. Sometimes what happens is, suppose I'm cleaning my cupboard. Things were lying in my, you know, cupboard for a long time. I'm cleaning it today. And then suddenly find something I have no use for. And suddenly I see someone coming. "Hey, come here. Here's a gift for you." So you know it's useless for you. You want to get rid of, and therefore you hand it to someone. Still, And it may be useless to him also. But a useless gift is better than giving no gifts at all. That's one thing. But next is a gift given out of duty. So somebody calls you for his birthday or something and you carry a gift. More out of duty. No, I can't be going empty-handed. So here is a gift for you. So first is some gift better than no gift. Slightly better than that is a gift given out of a sense of duty. I have to give, therefore I give. But still, what is the best gift? The best gift is given truly, to truly please that person. What is it that that person will be really pleased by? So, what will please him the most? That I give. And another thing is, what he needs, or what would be appropriate for him, what he really use, he needs it, or he will actually use it. That kind of gift, that means a person has done a lot of thinking. What will please him, what he will really need, what he generally uses. Actually, I know people who go a great deal of extend themselves to find out what does this person really require, which he needs, but he doesn't have. And if I give, it will please him. So, that means he really wants to do something. That means he has done a lot of research, a lot of homework to find out from other sources. Obviously, you can't catch hold of the fellow. What will please you the most? What do you need? Then that fellow will say generally, I don't need anything. But he has indirectly found out and given. It actually touches the heart of the person. And that person becomes, so happy. So this person really, and you get a place in his heart, such a person's heart. So one, that's why our action speaks louder than our words. You may say, I love you, I really love you. But a small gift can speak volumes when you have actually done that. I after reading this book, I'll give you one incident which happened, and I could see the difference in the face of that person. After I read the book, I was thinking I should be giving gifts now. So we were returning from a trip outstation. So in the train, I don't have a bead bag now. I have a bead bag, if you've seen. It has a pocket outside. And in the pocket, I always keep this ear plugs. Those soft one, cotton. So a train, I use it because there's a lot of noise. So I just use that. So the devotee with me, he also has it, but he had kept it in his bag. He didn't have a pocket in the bead bag. I told him, I always keep it in the bead bag. So whenever I carry bead bag, it's with it. So he said, that's a nice thing. Then he looked around, he had forgotten in the residence where we were staying. So poor fellow, I had to chant. So I just noticed it and I said, So, it will be very nice if he can have a bead bag with a, pocket in it and thing. So immediately I came and I told one devotee, please get me two bags, bead bags, made of the same color. He wears saffron, so I said saffron color with a, thing attached to it. And then I bought from the stall these two things and put it inside. And next day morning, just as he was going for Mangalarti, I said, Prabhu, just 1 minute. Here is two bead bags with, sets of this. I just gave and I looked at his face. And when you had to see to believe it. He was shocked. He was shocked that, he never even thought about it. He just said, hey, very nice, huh? It will be nice actually to have carried that. That's all. So I knew, this is what he needs. So when you really want to please someone, you desperately look for what would be, and in due course you may know. And when you take an effort to actually work at it, and you give it at the right moment, when he actually needs it, what would please him, what he really would be using it most, that, you know, kind of, it just touches the heart of the person. It says, wow, this is just what I needed, you know. And the fact is, every time he uses that, he remembers, you know, this person gave. So you get his blessings. So I realized, I was writing down these notes, but when I actually did this little exercise, I actually realized it's the potency of this. These are small things. Actually, this bead bag costs literally nothing because I got it free. There was a piece of dhoti and this fellow keeps on making. So it was nothing, but just the effort and the thought behind the whole thing that actually won his heart. So this is about giving the gift. And the second part is receiving the gift. How we should receive the gift, that's also equally important. By receiving, relationship is enhanced. And by refusing a gift, a relationship is thwarted or destroyed. Just like this example. Somebody give you a gift and you just, you know, turn your face and walk off. Finished. Your relationship is sealed now. Because he has somehow extended himself and he just refused the gift. Of course, when would you reject a gift? Would you like to say? Why and when would you reject a gift? Why would someone reject a gift? Yeah?
When someone takes it in a mocking
way. Yeah. If the way it is given, you don't appreciate. Right? Anything else? Yeah? I didn't get it.
You might feel unworthy to accept.
Okay, you feel that you are unworthy to accept. Yeah, you could feel that, you know. But still, when he is offering with love, you can't say, I am unworthy. No, please, I don't. So, he may push it. But some places you will absolutely refuse it. Yeah, is a point. We'll discuss that. That I won't use it. So I don't. And when you feel unworthy, and you said when you, what the first one? In a mocking way it's given. Something else, Prabhu, you're... Yeah. When the motive of the person, when it is given in a mocking way, the way it is given, or the intention, why is he giving me this gift? All of a sudden, tomorrow he's going to come and, you know, ask for a favor. Sorry, Prabhu, I don't want it. So when, you know, when clearly you notice the motive, all of a sudden, this fellow is having this. I remember one time, this is actually my own experience, before I joined Krishna consciousness, my brother, he's the administrative officer at that time. Now he's in a higher post. At that time he was the administrative officer and manager of purchases and all that. So one man from Delhi happened to move over to our colony, and he was supplying to this company where my brother was working. And one day, he sent a van. It had so many gifts, some suitcases, very costly, and some glassware, you know, cutleries and things like that. So many things. So my mother asked, you know, what's it, where is it from? He said, no. Your brother has asked me to deliver all these things. So my mother said, maybe he has sent it somewhere. Okay, she took everything. Evening, my brother came back. So my mother said, Ma, very nice. This is very nice. This I like. This I'm going to use it. He said, who sent it? I don't know. Where is it from? He said, you don't know? So someone brought it And he said, did they give you something of identification, who they are? She said, yeah, he gave a card. So they said, Mr. So and so. So immediately he said, this man is the recently has come. He is a supplier to the company. And I am the purchasing officer. Therefore, he knows that I am going to place some crores of orders. No, at least lakhs of rupees. Therefore, he wants to impress me by sending me these gifts. He said, I don't want even a piece of this here. Immediately, he called that fellow. And he said, within 2 hours, if you don't take it, then I won't see you your face again. Just take everything out. Without my permission, why did you bring it? And that fellow immediately sent the vehicle, took everything back. And he personally came and he told my brother, I'm very sorry. I thought you will appreciate it. But anyway, I have no orders. No, at least lakhs of rupees. Therefore, he wants to impress me by sending me these gifts. He said, I don't want even a piece of this here. Immediately, he called that fellow. And he said, within 2 hours, if you don't take it, then I won't see you your face again. Just take everything out. Without my permission, why did you bring it? And that fellow immediately sent the vehicle, took everything back. And he personally came and he told my brother, I'm very sorry. I thought you will appreciate it. But anyway, I have no... I came to know that you are a man of, you know, you don't like these kind of things. So I would like to invite your whole family to my home for a lunch. My brother said, that's perfectly all right. And a week later, you could come to my place for lunch with your whole family. That's not a problem. But without my knowledge, don't send all these things. Because he knew. Penny wise, pound foolish. You know, he's sending a little few thousands worth and you're obligated. And then he will say, you know, give me a few lakhs of worth order for the factory, for the company. So, immediately the gift was refused downright. Because he knew the intention behind, as he said, the motive was clearly it was exploitative. So that's a fact. Anything else? The intention, its use, worthlessness, or the way it is given mockingly. So he said, rejection could be due to the fact that I don't like the gift. I don't like the gift. Or it could be I don't like the person. You may like the gift, but the person who is giving you don't like it. Therefore, I said, I don't want. Or simply you are in a bad mood. And that fellow is trying to pacify you and give. Get out. I don't want your gift and you get out of here. So in a bad mood. And acceptance. Actually, when you accept a gift, it gives a strong signal. And what is the signal it gives? That we respect the person. We respect the gift. We respect the thought as well as the intention behind the giving of the gift. And we trust the giver and not suspect. Suppose you're walking on the street and some stranger comes and gives you a box. He says, this is a gift from my side. Obviously, you won't touch it. So why is this giving? What's his motive? Now, there may be a bomb in it which may explode. So, when you accept a gift, that means you trust that person. Oh, I really trust and he is giving something. So it all these things are implied when we simply accept the gift. We are obliged and bonded to that relationship. Once you have taken, that means you accept that relationship, you are obliged and bonded. And merely by accepting, we imply the existence of a relationship between us. So I imply, yes, we have a relationship. Therefore, you are giving and I am accepting. If I don't accept, that means I don't I acknowledge that relationship between you and me. And therefore, I reject. So, it's such a scientific thing, you see. Subtly, just a small giving of a gift and accepting involves so much of subtle, you know, psychological thing happening. It helps to establish a relation Once you give a gift, it helps to establish a relationship. Just like, while selling something, I don't know, this may not be very common in abroad, but here in India, suppose you go to Chowpatty and sit on the beach, the groundnut, you know groundnuts? The groundnut seller, you know groundnuts? These sellers, the peanuts what they call. These sellers, they come, and if they see a couple, you know, husband and wife sitting down and talking, or you know, just two lovers sitting there, you know what he does? He just comes and takes few peanuts and gives them a free sample. And he says, you taste it, don't pay, just taste it. And you taste it. And once he tastes, then he's obliged. He has accepted, and then he says, and he stands there. He just stands there. That seller stands there. And then he says, okay, 2 rupees, you know, give me something. So by giving a small gift freely, he is obliged now. You know, I have accepted, I have eaten, I have tasted, and then I have to buy something. In this way in Vrindavan they do this. Nowadays they don't do it. But earlier in Vrindavan, you know, Lohi Bazaar, what Govind Prabhu was mentioning, these are real pakka vaishyas. When you go to the shop, I know, I have seen one lady, she's from Pune, one devotee. She wanted to buy a small piece of cloth for her Shaligram or Laddu Gopal. Small Laddu Gopal deity she has. She wanted to have one piece of cloth, small piece of cloth she was looking for. And this man said, oh Mataji, come. And there's a big place, and he made her sit down, and he said, hey, get, it was a very sunny day. So he said, just get nice chas, you know, buttermilk. And he gave her, and he talked to her so nicely. So where are you from? Sit down, you know, be relaxed, everything. And after 5 minutes, she said, yes, what do you want? She said, yes. Oh, why this? See this also, he threw so many things, you know, this. Watch Laddu Gopal. Oh, Laddu Gopal, you worship Laddu Gopal. Wonderful. You know, yeah, we have so many things. This is there, you can use this also, you can use this crown. This lady went to buy one piece of dress, and she came out with at least, I think, 800 rupees worth. Full box of things. Because once she was drinking the, buttermilk, it took time, about 5 minutes, you know, by the time he brought it, then she took it. And he was conversing with her. They developed a nice relationship. He said, anytime you come from Pune, come here, Mukutwala, Bhikshu Laddu Gopal, wonderful. You know, yeah, we have so many things. This is there, you can use this also, you can use this crown. This lady went to buy one piece of dress, and she came out with at least, I think, 800 rupees worth. Full box of things. Because once she was drinking the, buttermilk, it took time, about 5 minutes, you know, by the time he brought it, then she took it. And he was conversing with her. They developed a nice relationship. He said, anytime you come from Pune, come here, Mukutwala, Bipin Mukutwala, I remember. Whatever, you know, some name. You come here. And he told some names. Oh, you are from Pune. This person you know, this person you know, this person you know. Fatafat. 3-4 names. She said, yeah. I know. They regularly come here and buy. These people are expert talkers. And before you know, she had whole box of things purchased. She had no intention. She went to buy a small piece, which would have costed about 10 rupees. But he offered a little nice buttermilk and beautiful, nice words, and she bought a whole set. And anytime she goes, he calls her as if, you know, they are known for each other for lifetimes. They are experts, I mean, really. But the point is, little gift, offering something, and talking very nicely, can win the heart so much, our trust of that person. Of course, there the mood is, in one sense you can say, exploitative. But in a nice way, they do it. You don't even feel exploited, you know. You feel very nice. Anyway, so there are 2 points I'll finish. Maharaj writes, our Danvir Maharaj writes in the book. He said he visited Latvia, and here there is a city called Riga, and there he noticed, it was the beginning of the school after vacations, so all the children were carrying some bouquets of flowers. And he found out what was the reason. And he found out that in that particular city, when the school reopens after vacation, all the children who are joining new to the school, they carry a bouquet of flower for the teacher. It is a tradition, it's a culture. And these are young children, just joined school, just now joined the school. For the first time they are going to the school. And the parents had given in their hands a flower. Now probably the children don't even know why they are giving, to who, why they should give. But it's a tradition that the children on the first day of the school, they go and give this flower bouquet to the teacher. And he was saying that when all the children go on the first day and give this to the teacher will be inspired. Now the teacher may feel appreciated. Oh, may not be the children, but the parents are appreciating. Therefore they are sending these flowers, that they are appreciating and recognizing my service. And she will be inspired to teach them well, to reciprocate that obligation and also that appreciation. So this small act of giving a bouquet of flowers on the first day of the school, it's a tradition, but that if you go behind the tradition, the message is one of appreciation and obligation, and you know, there is a loving exchange. So you are inspired to serve nicely. And finally he says, a gift is actually a part of the person giving that gift. The giver is represented in the gift, and the receiver will think about him whenever he sees the gift, especially if it is a distinctive gift. Actually, when you give a gift, you are giving a part of yourself. And therefore, every time a person sees that gift, he'll remember the person. Obviously, suppose you give a very costly gift, you know, which is on the mantelpiece. Somebody sees and appreciates, he says, yeah, yeah, so and so gave me this gift, you know. And you remember the whole thing about that person. So in this way, you are giving a part of yourself. So these are certain things. And then later he goes about gratefulness of how to accept the gift. Suppose we are the receiving, how we should accept it. Then different kinds of non-physical gifts. Then he talks about business gifts. Caring for the gifts. You know, if you neglect the gift, suppose somebody gives you a gift and next day he comes and in the dustbin he sees that gift being thrown. He feels that my relationship is dealt with like that. This is how this fellow, you know, has dealt with my relationship. Therefore it must be very, you know, carefully handled. Because when you are handling a gift, you are handling with that other person's heart. So when you neglect, you are actually hurting. I remember Srinathji Prabhu. Is it off the mic? Yeah. Srinathji Prabhu one time got us a very... He put it off. If he hears, he'll be reminded and he'll be upset. Srinathji Prabhu gave us a beautiful, nice... So, he made... they were supposed to make some clay models. So, Danvir Maharaj made a small ashtray, you know, of the clay. A very rough looking, you know. Not a very fine looking. And he gave it to his mother. And for years his mother kept it. And she kept it right in the center of the room. And any guest who would come, she said, "This, my son has made it." And every time he said, I felt so proud that, you know, I gave this gift to my mother. People feel, you know, but if that's nourished, then you feel your love and relationship being nourished. So sometimes when Prabhupada was given some gift, somebody would bring some bouquet of flowers. Immediately Prabhupada would order his disciple to bring a vase of water and keep it very nicely there, you know, stick it up there. People felt very nice. Burijan Prabhu writes, Burijan Prabhu gave some ring, and Prabhupada was keeping that. So like that, how we care for the gifts also shows to the person how we care for that relationship. You know, these are very subtle things. Of course, something is very temporary, so you may ultimately dispose them off very nicely. But the idea is, it's not just a gift, it's the heart of the person. You know, it's an extension of that person. And the way you deal with it, you are showing to that person, this is how I deal with your relationship. So it carries a lot of, you know, these six exchanges what Rupa Goswami mentions, they have very deep significance also. If you understand the psychology and the science behind these loving exchanges, we can fully utilize to develop sweet, wonderful, loving relationships among Vaishnavas and to cultivate and maintain that relationship, and it can go on very nicely. And he says some things like, it need not be physical gifts, just sweet words of appreciation, of praise, of wishing them on, you know, significant days. These things communicate a lot about our feelings for the person. So, like that. Only when I read this book, I mean, these are devotees who have been in the movement for 30 years, almost 25, 30 years. And when you read their realizations about subject matter, these are powerful tools, you know. Sometimes, just like you have some tools and you don't know how to use them, but when you know, just like computers, there are some computers, there are so many facilities. If you don't know, then you can't get the best out of it. Similarly, every verse, every shloka is like a powerful tool. You know, the six kind of exchanges are a powerful tool. It's there with us. But if you know its significance and know its importance, then we can effectively use it to advance in Krishna consciousness and help build wonderful relationship and even to expand. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, this movement was started single-handedly and it has expanded just because of this. I want to read that one particular statement before we conclude. Yeah. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. This society was started single-handedly, but because people are coming forward and dealing with the give and take policy, the society is now expanding all over the world. You know, it was started with a single person, but he knew. And when Krishna is in the center and the motive is not of exploitation, then this six loving exchanges are a powerful medium to actually expand the society and also for us to also appreciate the association, develop and nourish the association, and advance. So we'll discuss that maybe tomorrow if time permits. The other few, maybe I'll just run through, otherwise there is a lot of things. But at least these two, especially this gift part, receiving and receiving, taking and receiving, and revealing one's heart in confidence and hearing in confidence. These two are, these four at least, are very powerful. So thank you very much. We'll stop here. 5 o'clock. Too long I've spoken. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Rupa Goswami Pad ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Om. Nanti Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.